We've come to bring this ancient wisdom. This is actually beyond time. In this material world, we measure everything in terms of time and space. But actually, there is knowledge which is completely beyond this realm of time and space. That is called transcendental knowledge or spiritual knowledge. The nice thing about this knowledge is that you become free of all anxiety. Because actually we are beings of that spiritual nature. This time and space dimension, everything is born, it gets sick, it gets old, and it dies. Everything here. Yeah. A tree, a human being, an elephant, everything comes and goes. Civilizations come and go. This is a world where everything is limited by the time factor. And of course our bodies are under that same law, our material bodies. But the reality is that we are beings of that other nature. That's why no matter what arrangements we may make here for our happiness, our satisfaction, those arrangements always somehow never fully satisfy us. No matter how much money we may have, no matter how much prestige we may have, no matter how much power we may accrue by our diplomacy, this never really satisfies us. And we work so hard, we struggle so hard to make money, to have nice facilities here, but no matter what we do, we're always somehow feeling deficient. So, this knowledge that has been handed down from one great realized soul to another realized soul for thousands and thousands of years connects us with that existence beyond time and space. And the result is you become ecstatic because now you're no longer being limited by the material nature. You're actually tuning in to your eternal existence, which is full of knowledge and is full of bliss. And not only do you tune into your own nature, but you can also see that nature in everyone and in everything. Because the spiritual reality, the spiritual existence of every living thing is actually a fact. A tree, a flower, all human beings, all animals, all living things actually have spiritual identities beyond that temporary body. So it's actually the most exciting thing to have this spiritual enlightenment, Krishna consciousness. It's the most enlivening thing you could ever imagine. Because now all of a sudden you can see the eternal nature of everything. Of course it comes gradually as you progress. Just like when the sun rises in the morning, it's just not, it's not like all of a sudden it's high noon within a second. Gradually the dawn comes in, it's a little bit, instead of completely black, it's just, it's a little bit of slight glimmer of light, and then gradually the sun comes up further, further, further. So sometimes people think that spiritual enlightenment is just like, being zapped with some lightning. But actually it comes not like that. I mean, it could, but generally it doesn't. It normally comes in very, very slow increments. One who steadily takes up any bona fide system. Of course, that system has come down through many great teachers in history, whether it's in the Muslim tradition, the Christian tradition, the Hindu tradition. But actually, that realization is the same. We may label it as Muslim or Christian or Hindu or Buddhist. But these are our own material conceptions, actually. Because that actual enlightened state of consciousness is beyond all these designations that we human beings try to put on it. So it's actually mentioned in the Vedic wisdom, which is the really the most mature and detailed explanation of the self-realization science. It's certainly not the only explanation in the world, but the Vedic scriptures give the most and go into the greatest depth of description. So in the Vedas it is said in the Naradiya, what is that, the Brihad Naradiya Purana, it is stated, Harnama, Hadarnama, Harnama Iva Kevalam, Kulo Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. Chant the names of God, chant the names of God, chant the names of God. That is the means of enlightenment in this very materialistic age we're in now, which is called Kali Yuga, which started 5,000 years ago. So one can chant any name. You could chant a name of Allah, or you could chant a name in the Christian tradition, or any of the names from the Vedas. Any of the names are good. So one can actually see which names give one the greatest inspiration. Actually, it is recommended in another part of the Vedas, in the Kali Santarana Upanishad. That Upanishad recommends these particular names of God have the most power. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we like to chant these names because they are, you can also experiment and see. You can chant many different prayers in different languages. But this Sanskrit prayer, this Hare Krishna chant, it's very powerful. So for those people who are looking for spiritual enlightenment, we don't really care whether it's a Christian prayer, a Muslim prayer, a Hindu prayer. We don't care. But to us, they're all good. But we want to chant whatever prayer or whatever mantra will actually give us the quickest, most powerful result. So that's why we gravitate towards the Hare Krishna chant, but we never say it's the only chant. But it has that recommendation in the Kali Santarana Upanishad. Plus, by experimentation, we find that it really is something special, this Hare Krishna chant. So, has he ever experienced kirtan?
I think so, yes.
Huh?
Yeah.
So we can have a little kirtan then. What about the neighbors though, this hour? Maybe it's too early.
Not too early. It's people go out for work.
Yeah. I haven't seen many people leave for work yet. Of course, maybe they're getting up, they're already up. There's one going now. Well, we can have a little kirtan. That would be nice. And we have a beautiful prayer we also sing called Jai Radha Madhava, which it's a standard song that we sing before our morning class. So I'll let you hear that one too. If you can try to join, I'll give you the lyrics here. Let's see. Here we go. Yeah. The bottom one. It's a very beautiful prayer. Actually, it glorifies these deities of Radha and Krishna.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivare Dhari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivaritari. Jashodanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jashodanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjab Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjab Bihari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So, while we are here, we can there's four key verses of the Bhagavad Gita, so today we will study the first of those four, and that way we can have a little lecture series here while we're in Istanbul. This was actually, looks like Adi Radhika has already marked this as a special verse, so that reconfirms my decision to speak on this verse today. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
This is the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text number 8. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti madva bhajante mang buddha bhava samanvita. This is Lord Krishna speaking. This is the Supreme Lord speaking. Some say that the Supreme is actually impersonal. This is a very common conception of the Supreme Being. But we have to ask this question. Is the Supreme limited or unlimited? And since we have to rightfully say that the Supreme must be unlimited, otherwise how the Supreme can be Supreme, therefore we cannot put any limitation on the Supreme. That means the Supreme is both personal and impersonal at the same time. To say that the Supreme is only personal and cannot be impersonal, that's a limitation. Or to say that the Supreme is only impersonal and not can be personal, that's a limitation. It has to be both. Actually, we even see in an ordinary government, for example, or even just an ordinary person. We all have persons we know who are very, you know, they have very warm personal natures, but they also have their impersonal side sometimes when they're in a bad mood, you see. So we see that persons do have an impersonal side, but have you ever met an imperson that has a personal side? Like some rock, you know, sitting in your garden. An impersonal lump of matter, but does that impersonal rock ever sometimes say, you know, how are you doing today, or why do you keep stepping on me all the time? So we do see that persons have an impersonal aspect, but we never see that impersons have a personal aspect. So therefore, since we can logically understand that the Supreme Being unlimited must possess everything, both personality and impersonality, we can logically conclude, therefore, that the impersonal nature is subordinate to the personal nature. It can't be the other way. You can't have an imperson with a personal nature, but you can have a person with an impersonal nature. So when Krishna says, I hear, this is actually a person speaking. It is not simply a simile for the impersonal absolute, which does exist. There is the impersonal absolute, but that impersonal absolute is a subordinate feature of the personal absolute who is actually speaking here. So he says, I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So this is actually revolutionary information in one sense. Because now we actually find out what is the origin of everything. Krishna is claiming himself to be the origin, and he actually backed it up with all kinds of evidence also. As we see in later on in the Bhagavad Gita, he shows practically when he reveals his Vishwarup to Arjuna how indeed he is the source. He actually demonstrated it scientifically, and it was pretty heavy for Arjuna to see it. He said, I've seen enough. It was so heavy that Arjuna was just in a state of complete fear. It was so heavy to see everything, past, present, and future, happening all at one place, coming out of Krishna. The Vishvarup, the universal form, was directly perceived by Arjuna. But this actually gives us some understanding of who we are, what is reality. This actually ties the whole thing into a cohesive, one cohesive package. We try to make sense of it with our eyes, our ears, our intelligence. You know, we walk around thinking, well, what is this all for? Where did it come from? You know, with our, we use our microscopes, our telescopes, all kinds of, you know, electron microscopes, all kinds of gadgets we use to try to figure out what is this all about anyway. This is called the ascending method. You try to, you know, pick yourself up by your own perceptual powers. But the reality is that our perceptual powers are limited. Just like a dog has ears that can pick up sounds that we cannot hear. And just like our eyes, we know they're limited because we can use instruments to pick up ultraviolet rays, infrared rays, which our eyes cannot see. So there also, there's a lot out, there's practically an infinity of data out there, or phenomena, you could say, which are beyond not only our senses, which are also beyond our instruments. So how will we actually ever get that understanding and that knowledge of what lies beyond our perceptual power and the expansion of our perceptual power, all the instruments that we've invented over the centuries? How will we get to that? How will we access it? Well, this is called the descending method of Aroha Pantha. When that supreme source of all knowledge, of all of reality itself, chooses to reveal himself to us, then we can have perfect knowledge of everything, without having to undergo so many expensive scientific experiments. Just by hearing from that original source of all knowledge, we can actually realize everything. And you may say, well, how do you know it's really real? How do you know it's not just some kind of hype? Because after all, we are being hyped like anything from all sides now. Every billboard, every magazine, every TV, we're just being hyped right and left in the modern day world. So how do we know this is not another hype? Well, there's a very simple two-word description which answers that. Truth works. If Bhagavad Gita is actually true, then you should be able to apply the knowledge in a practical way. Just like taking applied science, for example, like chemistry. You may hear in the classroom H2O equals water, and you may say, well, you know, I've been hyped so many times. I don't really buy it. I've heard so many things from so many people, just hype. But in applied science, you can actually take that formula, you see. You can go to the laboratory, H2O equals water, and you can do it. When I was in high school, we did that. I was impressed. Yes, this is real. We took two parts hydrogen and one part oxygen, and we combined them together in the test tube, and there it was, water in that test tube. So this Krishna consciousness, Bhagavad Gita, is an applied science. It's theoretical and it's also practical. You can actually apply the science. You can try it, because Krishna says those who always chant my name, you know, he talks about the applied aspects too. The Bhagavad Gita contains both theoretical and applied science. It's all here in one book, one manual. This is not only the theories, but it's also the laboratory manual, all in one book, combined together in one very nice package. So by actually putting this knowledge into practice, then we see, yes, truth works. If something is actually true, H2O equals water, then when you actually take that theory to the laboratory and you put it into practical action, then lo and behold, you get water in your test tube. So this same thing happens for one who applies this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. Same thing happens. You actually realize God, personally realize God. You actually have your own spiritual awakening. That Krishna's son arises within your heart and the whole world becomes transformed for you. Sometimes it is said that Krishna consciousness is one switch that turns on the whole world. Now the others may still be in darkness, you see. But when you become Krishna conscious, you will see the light of Krishna everywhere. The whole world will become illuminated for you. You will see Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. So here, Krishna is saying that he's the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from him. So this really tells us why we exist. When I was speaking in a school in Finland a year ago, I asked this question, why do you exist? I asked the children, why do you exist? And one boy, he said, because my mother and father wanted to have a baby. That's why I exist. So his conception of his existence was this temporary body, you see. But actually, we existed before this body came into existence. And that, some people have a hard time understanding that, but actually, if you look at it scientifically, the bag of chemicals which make up your body right now, that combination of atoms, molecules, you know, blood corpuscles, etc., that make up your body right now, that's not the same set of chemicals you had when you were 5 months old, you see. That set of chemicals has completely changed. But yet you have, maybe not at 5 months, but certainly at 5 years you may have some memory when you were a little boy running around Istanbul or wherever doing this and that, you see. You have memory of experiences that you had when the chemicals that make your body up now was different. It's a different group of chemicals. So this actually demonstrates scientifically for anybody who has an open mind, an inquiring mind, that the self and the body are two different things. They're not the same. So just as we have changed bodies in this lifetime, so many changes of body, in fact, if you really look at it down to the details, you will see the body you have right now is not the same exact body you have when you walked in the door 20 minutes ago. The body is constantly changing. We inhale, we exhale. You see, new chemicals are coming in, old chemicals are going out. We eat, we go to the bathroom. There's a constant flux going on here. Just like in a riverbed, the water molecules, in America we have a big river called the Mississippi. And it is fed by other rivers. The Ohio River feeds into it. The Missouri River feeds into it. And finally, that Gulf of Mississippi River feeds into the Gulf of Mexico in the southern part of the U.S. So you stand on the bank of the Mississippi River somewhere in the middle of America and you say, well, this is the Mississippi River. You look at that water and this is the Mississippi River water. But you may hold it in your hand, but that same exact water 3 days ago was called the Missouri River, you see. And in a week from now, that same exact water will be called the Gulf of Mexico. So the same thing with these bodies. These chemicals are just flowing through, you see. They're just flowing through this area. They're actually, it's a cluster of chemicals sitting around the Atma, the soul, which is seated in the heart. It's a cluster of chemicals that are just, you know, stuck here, clustering around the Atma, the soul. And they're in constant flux. They're coming in, they're going out constantly. So what is actually constant is that living being who is sitting there, the Atma, the soul, who's sitting there in the heart of the physical body. Actually, his presence is what's energizing. How does that heart go on beating like that constantly for 80, 90, 100 years? Where does the physical heart get that much energy? It's an incredible machine, the human heart. It actually gets the energy because the Atma, the soul, which has connection with Krishna, who has an unlimited energy, he's the energetic source of all energies. That Atma, which is seated there, that it's being energized by Krishna. And that's where the heart gets the energy. And from the heart, then consciousness spreads throughout the whole body. You can feel something in your toe, you can feel it in your ear, you see. So that our consciousness spreads throughout our entire body, but there is also a supreme consciousness, Krishna. He is conscious of everything throughout the entire universe because this whole universe his body includes this entire universe, everything. So anyway, we have this conception. We can understand that I'm not my body, and I have a spiritual identity beyond this present mortal frame in which I am situated. Just like I can drive a Ford, or I can get a Chevrolet, I can get a Mercedes-Benz. You can, when one car wears out, you get a new one, or when one shirt wears out, you get a new shirt. So we're constantly changing bodies, just like garments, or just like going from one vehicle to another. But we are the driver of that vehicle. Are we the wearer of that garment? But the wearer and the driver remain the same, even though the garment and the vehicle may change. So when Krishna says everything emanates from me, that means we, the eternal spiritual beings, also emanate from Krishna. That's why we exist. That's where we come from spiritually. Krishna, and then someone says, well, why does Krishna exist? Well, that's easy, because he wants to. Somehow or other, Krishna exists by his own sweet will, or God, whether you say Allah or Krishna, same thing. Krishna exists because he wants to. He enjoys it. Krishna finds it very enjoyable to exist, so he does it. He exists for his own enjoyment. And he then, to expand his own enjoyment, just like you and I enjoy having friends, don't we? We like having friends. So Krishna expands from himself unlimited numbers of living beings. We are actually his children in that sense. He expands from himself millions and billions of living beings just so he can have our company, actually. So he can have loving exchanges with us. That's why we exist. We exist for the sole purpose of loving Krishna, actually. That's the only reason we exist. And that's why no matter how much we try to... Of course, this material world is an option for those who decided they didn't really want to love Krishna. The spiritual world is that option, is the place of residence for those persons who want to love Krishna. But no one is forced. Love can't be forced. I cannot force you to love me. I may try with a gun, but you will never love me. You see, love is voluntary. So, for those who don't really want to love Krishna, they wouldn't be happy to be in a world where everyone loves Krishna. So, Krishna has given this other world, the material world, which he is also the source of it, for those who don't really want to love him. But we come here and we try to live separately from Krishna or God, and we find that it's not so easy. And some of us, there's only a very small number, start to wonder, why am I suffering here? You know, why am I unhappy? And then when you're actually sincere, then Krishna will bring you in contact with a bona fide spiritual master. Krishna is within your heart. He is called Chaitya Guru, the spiritual master within. But he also manifests externally as the spiritual master, Guru, in front of you. He manifests personally to guide you from without also. Because we're not purified enough to hear the messages from within at this point. But we can hear the spiritual master, the external guru. We can hear and learn from him. And then he helps us to connect with the internal guru, so we can have that connection solidly established also, gradually. So, in this way, we understand why we exist, and why we are also here in this world of birth and death, and what we need to do to get back to our eternal spiritual enlightened consciousness in the spiritual world. So that really, in a nutshell, is what Krishna consciousness is. Are there any questions? I have a policy I always I practice, and that is, if you don't ask me questions, then I will ask you questions. So that always seems to keep things flowing along, because I can ask you questions. If you don't have any for me, I can ask you. You have any questions?
How does one get attracted to Krishna?
How does one get attracted to Krishna? Mm. Actually, to answer that question, we can understand, just like in this world, young boys and young girls are attracted to each other. That is our nature in this world. So how is it that a young boy or a young girl gets attracted to the young other, you know, the opposite sex? Well, they see them, they hear about them, by coming in contact with that beautiful young boy, a beautiful young girl, then the boy or girl becomes attracted by association, through hearing about, through serving, through contacting. Or it might be some movie star they fall in love with, they go watch their movies, you know, they see them on the screen, they read about them, they hear about them, they see them on television, they might go meet them sometime, or write them a letter. So in the same way, actually, we awaken our love for Krishna. You can hear about Krishna, you can see beautiful paintings of Krishna. You can meet Krishna's devotees also, you can see how much they love Krishna. So there are many ways, by hearing, by seeing, but especially the way that Krishna has given us to reawaken our dormant love for him is to chant his names. And to hear about him from a realized person. This is Prabhupada mentions in the introduction to the Gita. If you can find a person who has realized Krishna, and you can hear about Krishna from that person, that's the easiest way to do it. Because actually Krishna appears in the form of those words which describe him. You see. So if a realized person is describing Krishna, then through that sound vibration which is entering your ear, then actually Krishna enters, he comes in your ears, he sits in your heart. It's called Bhakti Lata Beej. The seed of devotion is planted in the heart by hearing from a realized person. And then if you will water that seed by regularly chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And you'll give up sinful activities which inhibit the growth of that seed. Then your dormant Krishna consciousness, which was always there, will become fully reawakened. And you'll become the happiest person you could be on what you ever thought you could ever be in your most outrageous imagination. You will feel happiness beyond anything you ever dreamed was possible. Every moment will be like a delicious meal. Every moment of your life will be a delicious meal. It's so delicious, you just can't believe how delicious it is every minute. You see? So that is Krishna consciousness. Questions more? So how do you like this Krishna? You have a question?
No.
How do you like this? You've read our books, any?
Yeah, I have. I have. I read the Turkish language, English language, the Bhagavad Gita.
Mm.
So, I have some friends in Krishna consciousness.
Mm. Where does your friend live?
Now he's in America.
Ah, okay.
In Seattle.
Oh, that's nice.
And in Azerbaijan.
Mm?
In Baku, Azerbaijan. Azerbaijan.
What is it?
The another
Azerbaijan
country.
Azerbaijan is.
Huh? Yeah,
there is a country.
Neighbor, not neighbor, but very near country, towards east.
There's a country near here, east of Turkey?
No, in the another country.
Azerbaijan. Is
Iran.
Country.
Where is Iran?
Oh, north of Iran, there's another country.
Also.
So.
One of the Stan countries?
Yeah, there is Krishna consciousness there. I have been there.
Oh, what country?
Azerbaijan. Azerbaijan.
Azerbaijan. Azerbaijan. Mm. The name of the country?
Yes.
Azerbaijan.
Beijan?
Yeah.
Azerbaijan?
Yeah.
Mm. Very nice.
The Turkish country.
Ah.
The Turkish people. Yeah.
Oh, it's a Turkish country. People. Oh, that's very nice. So you have been there also?
Yeah.
How far is that from Turkey?
2.5 hours by plane.
Oh, so it's not connected geographically. There is some.
No. There are between
other countries, but they're actually Turkish. Turkish is the national language and everything.
Yes, sir.
How did that happen historically? That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's like Turkey broken, and it's like part of Turkey, really, in terms of culture.
Yeah, like.
But politically separate.
The language is spoken throughout the East. In Kazakhstan also.
Oh, the Turkish language also.
Yes,
so the Turkish Empire used to be a very big, powerful empire,
yes.
Wasn't it?
Uzbekistan.
What was it called? The Byzantine Empire or something?
Ottoman Empire. Byzantine.
That was another one. What was the name of the empire?
Ottoman Empire.
Ottoman Empire, that's right. The Turks at one time ruled.
Yeah.
That was after the Greek and Roman and. After the Greek and Rome, the Turk Empire was very big. So that's why Turkish culture was there. That's right. The Ottoman Empire. That's right. I remember. And then later, the Spaniards defeated it or something.
Spaniards, they are far from here.
That was on the other side. So you had the Ottoman Empire going on this side,
yeah.
And the Spanish Empire on the other side. Oh, okay. Yeah. But actually, the modern historians don't know that at one time the Indian Empire had the whole, they covered the whole planet Earth in the ancient times. From India, the kings there ruled the whole planet Earth. Before 5,000 years ago, the Indian kings ruled the entire Earth planet. So actually, we're all Indians originally.
Yeah.
But we've broken up into different cultures after the Indian Empire broke up 5,000 years ago. So we have so many different cultures. But originally, we're all one culture. The whole planet, we're all this Vedic culture. Originally, we're all Vedic culture. We trace our ancestry back far enough. Okay then, so any other questions?
Really, this is what you said at the first when you began to speak. The business in Turkey, very difficult. I'm really in business always, just running. Why I'm running, I don't know. So, of course, I'm chanting. I have cassettes, I have something. I'm listening to some people also come visit us here from Russia, also one from America also. Now I don't remember their name, Guru.
I think it was Jay Advaita Swami.
Oh, there is another one, American, I think he was. Jayadas also.
Jayadas Swami?
Yeah.
Jayadas Swami?
No, I don't know. There's Jayadas. He's
Turkish. Jayadas.
Jayadas. Who has translated the Bhagavad Gita to Turkish language?
Oh, okay. So he's come. That's great.
Yeah, he was here.
Oh.
He'll come this summer also to print some books.
Today, I th-